what grade levels or core subjects did you teach?
Okay, I started out teaching in Iowa. I taught 4 years in the Nevada, Iowa public schools. My husband, Jack, was in graduate school at Iowa State University working on his PhD. So in the 4 years that he was doing that, I taught in Nevada, taught kindergarten for 4 years there. We moved to Evansville in 1971, and he took a job at the university. And the first few months that we were here, I substitute taught. And then I got a job down at the Reading Center, which I'm not sure they even have a Reading Center downtown anymore, but they used to bring students in from the schools. The family would have to transport them, and they'd come for an hour or two once a week. And
I think I heard about something like that.
And I'd worked down there and was a reading clinician for 2 years down there, and also was kind of at the point that we came to Evansville, they had eliminated the supervisor positions in elementary. So I went around to all the schools and worked with the kindergarten teachers. And
you were like supervised all of them?
But I wasn't a supervisor, and I certainly didn't get paid as a supervisor. I was a reading clinician. But I would go around and see what they needed and see what they were doing and put on workshops and things for kindergarten, because that had been my previous jobs. Yeah. And then I did that for a little over 2 years, and then I got a job at Teacouple School as a kindergarten teacher. And that was in 1974. And let me see. Altogether, I taught kindergarten for 18 years. And then my last few years of teaching, and I can never remember when I started teaching second grade. And I taught second grade from, 1990 to the time I retired in 98.
Okay. Describe the classroom you remember best.
Well, I suppose the classroom I remember best was the kindergarten classroom at Teacouple. When I first started, it was a very large room. It had the old-fashioned cloak room or coat room, and another room besides that, two little bathrooms, and it was just a nice, huge, big room.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Describe a typical day in your teaching career.
Well, I'll have to describe two different things, and I'll go back to the kindergarten days,
okay,
because I do have something that's kind of interesting that you might find interesting in your interview.
Okay.
When we started kindergarten in Evansville, of course, there was a morning group and an afternoon group, and I had an assistant, and we had maybe 30-some children in each group, I guess. You haven't heard all of it.
I had six in my kindergarten.
Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, we did that for the first few years, and so, you know, you would start out in the morning like with kindergarten, and you'd have your calendar and your attendance, and of course they didn't eat lunch at school, so you didn't have to worry about lunch money, but in the end you would sing, and you would do motor activities, and you would do reading readiness, and you would do art, you would do all of that in a half a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the afternoon, you would repeat
the whole thing over.
And I always felt that my morning class was my guinea pig, because if it didn't work in the morning, I wouldn't use it in the afternoon. So I had an opportunity to improve on what I did over the, and you wonder what a difference it made in the children. I can't remember how many years ago, there were four pilot schools in Evansville that went to full-day kindergarten. So when you say 30 or 35 is a lot of kids, we combined in mid-year, in a March of 1 year, both morning and afternoon classes. And we had 66, I think, the first year or the second year in one classroom.
How many teachers?
Just me and 2.5 assistants. Yes. And at that point, then the easy part went where I could repeat what I did in the afternoon. Now I had to plan for an entire day and deal with 65, 66 children. So we just did more reading readiness. They had their play time, of course. But we just got more of everything in, I guess you might say.
Yeah.
Better preparation. And at that time, you know, there were so many working parents. Of course, a lot of people accused us of being babysitters, and I would say was, look at my curriculum and then tell me if I'm babysitting.
Yeah.
You can't possibly say that I'm a babysitter if you see the kinds of curriculum that we mm-hmm. have and what we're doing.
Yeah.
So that was a typical day in well, not really a typical day, but I guess in kindergarten.
And then did they separate where there was two kindergarten classes, or how many years did you do it?
They're still doing it. Well, we would go to the school board. I mean, every year the four of us would go down and say, this is impossible. Uh-huh. And so eventually they cut it down to 40, and then they cut it down to like 20-some. I think every once in a while you still have 20, 30 in a class, yeah. but not like it used to be. Oh, yeah, I had wall to wall. I mean, from the chalkboard clear back to the windows, and that was a big
room. That's a lot with
room.
Little kids.
Oh, well, I always said if you're a good teacher, it doesn't make any difference how many assistants you have. If you're a good teacher, you're going to have to get to every one of those children yeah. every day anyway. Uh-huh. So, yes, it was. I wasn't sure I liked teaching there for a while. But
uh-huh. Okay. Describe your relationship with the administrators you worked for. What was their job like?
Well, I basically got along with all my administrators. One of them was very, very fine, very, very nice, but not very, very not very organized. The mm-hmm. next one we got was extremely organized, wouldn't bend the rules for anything, went by the book. and my last one that I had just for a year seems to probably be, he was extremely fine. Of course, their role is to administrate and run the school. At one time, you know, the role of the principal was to be the disciplinarian, and uh-huh. of course now no one can discipline as much as I probably yeah. feel that they need to be. You mm-hmm. know, you just can't do that. And so I see the role of the principal, though, this is to be the one that, you know, sets the tone of the school and whether there's any monkey business that's going on mm-hmm. or, you know, how well the kids behave.
And now it's more disciplines left up to the teachers.
I think so. And I think that, you know, you want to be able to do it yourself.
Yeah.
I think these kids come along, though. We've had some really bizarre type children that come into the classrooms that you just wonder how little kids can get so messed up emotionally and oh my. So those are kinds of kids that, and I think a lot of times too, even a child that's, and I may be wrong, this just is an opinion, that a lot of times if a child is on Ritalin, that's a crutch, you know, that gives me an excuse for acting the way I do, or if I don't have my medicine today, therefore I can act this way.
Yeah.
And so many times you wonder whether it is just behavior or whether it's, you know, a real problem there. Maybe somebody just needs to crack down on you, you know.
Describe a student or students you remember the most, I guess.
Well, I guess one that always comes back to me is a little boy that I had in second grade a few years back, and his father had been in the military, or was in the military. He was, I think, the finest boy I ever had. And I've had a lot of nice, mm-hmm. nice children. But he was so very polite, and so intelligent, and so thoughtful. So I guess what I liked most about him was he was so courteous and polite. Mm-hmm. And so often you don't see that
anymore.
You wonder who, you know. Has no one ever told him to say thank you when they receive something? And this was just the finest boy, and he was just very, very, very smart, and just, I don't know what else to say about him. He was just
extremely
all
polite.
Around good kid. Yeah. And he moved away. He moved, his father was transferred.
Oh, he probably moved a lot.
Yes. And then that's another thing. You think, how can he be so fine?
I know.
If he's been in so many different positions. And then you wonder if it's not the military background, you know, the strictness, the firmness of it.
Okay. How was your curriculum course of study developed?
My curriculum that I taught the kids?
Yeah.
Well, we did a lot of curriculum writing when we went to the full-time kindergarten, too, so I've had an opportunity to be involved in that. How it was developed, you know, so much of it you have to go by what your textbooks are.
Mm-hmm.
But in kindergarten, you didn't have maybe that many. You had a workbook, and that was so. You kind of developed your curriculum. You knew what it was expected of the child at that age, and you kind of. Well, it's funny because when I first came to Evansville, they were just starting Sesame Street and those kinds of things. And when I was dealing with, like, the kindergarten teachers, so many of them felt that we were getting too much academics in the classroom because, after all, they needed to come just to socialize, which it had been in the olden days. You came and you played and you took a nap and you did all these things, but you didn't do much academics. Well, they had, you know, I'm going, wait a minute. You these kids have watched Sesame Street, Electric Company, and all these things. They've watched this since before they've come to kindergarten. All of a sudden, you want them to come to public schools and sit around for a year? You know, that just doesn't go. So I think that in respect to developing a curriculum, probably was helped by those kinds of things that they were seeing on television. Whereas we would have been maybe back in the dark ages, which I feel they're ready. I feel most of them are ready.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I'm answering these correctly or not. Okay.
However you answer is fine. How far did your paycheck go?
Well, of course, when we started, not very far. I would say now that, well, I'll just give you a comparison. My husband has a PhD. I got a master's when I came here, but it wasn't until maybe 10 years ago or so that he surpassed me in salary. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And now at the end of my career and where he is in his career, he's quite a bit ahead of me.
Yeah.
But when we started, I was making, with my master's degree in comparison to what he was making at the university, I was always making more than he was as a public school teacher.
Really? And he was at a university.
And he was you would think that didn't seem quite fair, especially with the difference in the degrees, even. You know?
Because how many years does it take to? That's an additional like 2 years.
At least four.
At least four.
Yeah, at least four.
Describe.
And a thesis and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That in a master's degree in education, you didn't need anything like that.
Okay. Describe any extracurricular activities you were involved in as part of your school day.
Well. The last few years, when I started out here, we were K through 8. So you had 7th, 8th graders who had basketball teams, who had cheerleading, who had those kinds of things. So that was my extracurricular. I worked with the cheerleading, the cheerleaders and the pom-pom girls and those kinds of things. When we went down to K-5, we really did not have any extracurricular type things.
Did they not have basketball then?
Well, once in a while, depending if they got a parent that would come in and coach.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the last few years have really been a lot different. And I always have felt, too, that there's not been, because you don't have those kinds of things, there's not been the school unity, the school loyalty. You know, you had a team and you cheered for your team and you went to the games. And then when they went to K to 5, see those kinds of things just.
I went to K through 8. And I liked it.
Yeah. And I can understand not putting the big kids and the little kids together, but I do think that there's a little bit of the aspect of.
Yeah, we had this buddy system where the older
kids. Oh, you did?
Where you'd have like one or two buddies. And the kids, I always loved that when I was a kid. And I liked it when I got older, too.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Think of an historical event that happened during your teaching career. What was school like that day or around that day? The bombing of Pearl Harbor, the assassination of President Kennedy.
Okay, I wasn't teaching when either of those happened, I suppose. And I can't recall. I suppose the Challenger would have been the most disastrous day.
Were you guys watching that on that day?
I'm guessing that we were. I don't remember. and I was probably in, I don't even know how many years ago that was. You know, dealing with the really little kids, the impact is not the same either as it would be as you were with an older group that you could discuss with. I can't give you a very good answer on
that's okay. Okay, what were some of the most trying situations in your career? Like if you didn't have any.
I didn't have a lot. I always felt that I was very fortunate to get along quite well with the parents. Yeah. I suppose if there was a trying situation. we had a child once who came to school. And she barely had any hair, was very thin, and wore long, long dresses, and kind of ran. You won't be able to describe this, like a chicken with a, you know, you hear the expression, a chicken with a paper head. Uh-huh. And she just kind of would run along the playground like this. She would not speak. She could barely eat. The nurse would work with her, and she was like she'd only been drinking out of a straw. So, we called in the authorities, and there were four or five little kids with them, and the mother was really strange, and I just remember having a case conference, and the mother was there, and she informed the principal and whoever was sitting in the case conference that I had, from the very first moment I had seen this child, I had decided I hadn't liked her. Huh. And you know, and of course I had to give my description over how she couldn't speak. And the mother told everyone at that point the only reason I couldn't understand her was that she spoke Hebrew. Well, come to find out, she had, they put her in special ed. Mm-hmm. She was a baby born at home, as were several of her siblings. And there's something, PKA, have you ever heard of that? I think, I'm not even sure I'm getting the term right. There's something in your makeup when you're born that they test you for. And if you don't have this, they can correct it right then. Well, she was born
with it. She was born at home.
So there were two or three of these children that were mentally retarded. But I do remember her telling everyone that I had hated this child from the very beginning. Aww. Because, you know, I had it in for her. And I just think of that. That was probably a real shocker of a day.
Yeah.
But I don't recall having any really, really bad experiences.
That's good.
Yes, I was lucky.
When did you feel successful? Describe a successful event in your career.
Well,
I guess like how long after your teaching did you feel?
I don't know. You know, you could feel successful every day when the children would go out the door and hug you and tell you they loved you. I mean, that's success. That's success right then. The feedback when you get from parents and people that come back to see you after years and years and years.
Yeah.
And your kindergarten teachers, you know, a lot of times they remember their favorite teacher as a teacher that they, when they were older, like fifth, sixth grade, maybe high school teacher.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't remember their kindergarten teacher. And I've had a lot of good feedback.
That's good.
From adults now who would say, you were always my favorite teacher when I think of my favorite teacher. So that's, to me, the success.
Yeah.
I was able to do a lot of curriculum writing. When I was down at the Reading Center, I did a lot of curriculum writing, and I had a lot of opportunities to do things that a lot of teachers don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was in that situation. So, and I guess I would look at those every time I do a workshop or something, and that was successful. That was a moment of success. But the most success, I would say, is the feedback
from
the kids and the parents. And those that you see even now on the street I've had kids of kids now, you know.
That's
good. That might not be exactly what they're wanting.
Good.
But
describe the best aspect of your teaching career or teaching profession. What are its most challenging aspects?
Of course, the most challenging. In my philosophy of teaching is, I guess, and one thing that. The child likes school, wants to come to school, doesn't want to miss school even when they're sick, then you've done the job that you should do. You know, anybody can get a book out and say this is this and this is this, but if they don't want to come to school and they don't love school,
then they're not
going to
learn.
And so what your question was, the best aspect, and when they learn, that's the ultimate.
Yeah.
That is it. That's your reward.
Yeah.
It's not always, certainly in teaching, not monetary, but that's your reward is when you see them catch on to something. Mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And the most challenging, I suppose the most challenging is to reach those kids that maybe emotionally are not ready, are not happy, giving them some light in their day, making them smile. And if they're never going to learn anything, if you make them like themselves, that's the challenge, to make them feel their self-worth, you know. That's, they, you know, feel good about yourself, and then you can do anything.
Yeah. Okay. What changes happened during your teaching career, like within society, curriculum, teaching styles, etc.? How did that affect your teaching? I guess what changed the whole time you're teaching?
Well, of course, they're always coming up with their new ideas. I've been very interested in thinking in my retirement that maybe I would like to supervise student teachers. Uh-huh. Can he do it?
Your teaching career.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So I was saying that I always thought that maybe I would like to supervise student teachers. And yet, I cannot necessarily go along with the new methods that they're teaching, like when they were doing the whole language. And, you know, there are so many aspects of those that if you combine whole language with your basic skills, that's wonderful, which is what we've been doing always. Uh-huh. But they come out and they say, this is the only way to teach, and you have to teach uh-huh. this way. I can't go along with that. To me, and now they found out, of course, they're following the California pattern and all this, you know, yeah. and they've done it in California. All of a sudden, California is finding out that these children don't know how to read. Uh-huh. They couldn't do that because they concentrated on one thing. And I always equate these new programs in education with the emperor's new clothes. You know how the story is, you know, yeah, you got to say, oh, isn't it wonderful? Because if you don't say it's wonderful, then somebody's going to think you don't know anything. So, you know, whether you believe it or not, they jump on this bandwagon yeah. that says, oh, this is the new method. This is the new. And we had our principal before the last one pushed whole language.
Pushed whole language. That's
that was where you would, for instance, you'd read the story to the child. And that is helpful to do that.
Uh-huh.
Read the story to the child, and then the child would read it back, and then they'd literally memorize the story. They might not be able to read those words out of that story.
But they're memorizing.
They would not know sight words. They just didn't know phonics. They just thought they could learn it all from reading good literature. I mean, that's just fairly recent, so they must have backed off of that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of that.
Oh, and they may have another, that we they called, this wasn't too many, this is only 3 or 4 years ago.
This is my first education class. That's
oh, okay.
Why.
That's why. You'll be learning. You'll yeah. be listening, hearing about it, I'm sure. And I think they are probably backing off of it now because they have found out. Like I say, California was the first innovators of this type of a program out there. And this is the way to do it. And so everybody jumped on this bandwagon. Everybody said, oh, we've got to do it this way. And those of us who have done this before have said, hey, wait a minute. This was done years ago, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always go back to the basics. We always go back to learning phonics,
yeah.
sounding out words,
uh-huh.
you know, learning the alphabet.
Uh-huh.
And these new innovative programs that are pushed upon you by people that maybe don't know what they're doing or think they better do it, because after all, our old principal used to always say, research says. And we would say, yes, but you can make research say whatever you want
yeah.
it to say.
Definitely.
But if it was in research, she said, oh, it's going to be good. Well, now that's stupid. Anyway, so those are the challenges. When they come upon something and they want you to do it and force you to do it, when you maybe have done it under another name years ago and it didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What were the everyday challenges you faced?
Oh, boy. Everyday challenges. Everyday challenges. I suppose my biggest challenge in the classroom every day was that having children at different levels, you'd have so much work from the do. The good ones would have it done in 5 minutes, and the others might take uh-huh. 2 hours to do it. And you had to try to gear it so that the poor little guys who were slow at work didn't have to miss every recess because they didn't have their work done. Yeah. Or what do you do with the kids that are fast? Go read a book. That's what I always say. Go read a book. And then I think, they're probably going to hate to read because I have to go read a book. You know? But you hated to have them give them a piece of paper and say, draw a picture, you know. Yeah. But you couldn't gear it. I couldn't. So that's probably was my biggest challenge daily, mm-hmm. was keeping those that were finished early occupied without making them have to do too much extra work.
That's true.
And letting the little kids that were slow at it, you know, eventually get it done without having to miss some of the fun stuff of school.
That was the first thing I noticed in Mrs. Price's room, was that she had like a group of higher students, medium and low.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you can't just teach the whole class. You got to give them all these different little things to do.
You do.
Okay. What was your most embarrassing moment in teaching?
I don't know. Isn't that awful?
That's probably good.
It probably is good. Your most embarrassing?
If you don't have one.
I don't recall that I had one. I did a lot of things, you know, when the faculty would do fun things, but I was never embarrassed about it. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, you know, didn't know enough to be embarrassed. But I don't remember having and I don't think you do with the little kids.
Yeah.
You might have with an older group or something.
Yeah,
that's more embarrassing.
I don't know. True.
I don't, at this point, of course, I didn't remember you were coming tonight either, so who knows how much I forgot.
Okay. Describe the first school you taught in.
Well, the first school I taught in was in Iowa, and it was a consolidated school. It was in the very beginning where they didn't have their one-room country schoolhouses, and all the farm children were bused in because it was a small rural community. And mine was a brand new school. I moved into it brand new, and there were three kindergarten teachers in there, and so that was
in separate rooms.
Everybody had their separate rooms. But it was a very nice school.
Did you ever deal with a student that was physically or sexually abused?
Yes. And I didn't... I think I probably had more than one. They've not really talked to me too much. The last one I think that I had was going for counseling. She'd go every once in a while. Someone would come and get her and take her downtown, and she'd have counseling sessions. Mm-hmm. I do have a funny story I'll tell you about someone we thought was physically abused once, and this is a funny story.
Okay.
But I had this little boy was living with his grandmother, and he came to school one day, and this was in kindergarten, and he had these big red, look like hand splotches on his neck and back, and he showed us his back, and you know, of course, by law, you have to report anything that you think. So I took him to the nurse, and she looked at him, and she took him to the principal, who had been in one of the inner city schools, and she looked at him, and she said, oh, you know, this kid's been really hurt, really beaten. So they called Social Protection Services, and they came out, and they looked at him, and I don't know where he went. I don't think they let him go home after school. I mean, everybody looked at it and were sure that this was really bad. What it was, when they finally talked to the grandma, they wouldn't let him go home to her. He had worn some kind of a nightie, and he was allergic, and this was a kind of a rash on his body. It wasn't, but it looked like great big handprints all over it, you know. But that's what it was. Yeah. I talk about an embarrassing thing. Although I didn't feel that I was not embarrassed, but the nurse and the principal who had seen many of these things were also, you know, they thought that this child looked like he'd been physically abused.
Did they question her at all?
But these are little kindergarten ones, too, and sometimes I don't remember what he even said, but it wasn't anything like that at all. It was just a real misunderstanding.
Did she get mad at you? Or?
No, not really.
That's really good.
Yeah, that was good. And as far as, I had a little boy a couple of years ago that had seen his father throw his baby sister against the wall and kill her. And he was really emotionally messed up. And, you know, he was one of those you talk about trying to make him have a good, happy day. Mm-hmm. Because, for one thing, his life must have been horrible. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was, if it wasn't happy day, he was terrible. And his mother was worse. They were afraid she'd come to school with a gun. I mean, she was, okay. She's still over in the school, I think. And then she strikes terror in everyone's hearts. This mother does. So, you know, I've had some, but nothing that I really had to deal with.
What was the biggest problem you had in your classroom? Did you send students to the principal's office, and for what offenses? I guess, what would they have to do for you to send them to the principal?
Okay, probably get in a fight, an actual physical
fight.
Then I would do that. And I had a little boy once who brought I wonder if it was a knife or a fingernail file or clipper, but he was threatening to kill people. And this was in second grade. Yeah. And so, you
know. Was that recently or a long time
ago? It was 3 or 4 years ago, so. Mm. Well, he's a bad, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows where he is now? He's probably middle school age is all, but who knows
what he's doing now.
Involved in, yeah. He was kind of he just had a bad life and bad situation. Yeah.
What was your first day in the classroom?
Gosh, you know how long ago that was?
Were you nervous your first day?
Oh, yeah. In fact, every year.
Every year?
Every year as school started, you'd be nervous, you know. That night you'd lay in bed and think, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? Even if you had it all written out and you knew exactly what you were going to do. And there was always, yes, always nervous before the first day.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did you ever have a really bad first day?
No, not that I know of. I think maybe when I did student teaching, those were maybe some bad first days. But I was older than the teachers that I was working with when I did student teaching
because
I was already married with children when I did mine. But I don't know. No, I don't remember that my first day. But I do remember somebody telling me that I had a cousin who was a teacher, and she said, you cannot be too happy and cheerful that first day, because you really need to be really stern and really gruff and everything, because then you can relax. But you want to start out. Well, I could never go along with that. That's not my nature anyway.
Because then they may not like you from the first.
Well, I do believe that there's got to be a little bit of fear. I really truly believe that. I believe that there needs to be someone in your home, like the dad or the mom, who's ever the disciplinarian. There needs to be somebody that child is just a little bit afraid of, because they don't push it. And the same way in the classroom. And if it's not you, then that's where the principal needs to come in, where there's somebody. You know, when you were growing up, maybe not you, because you're very young. When I was growing up, to go to the principal would be an awful thing. Well, you know, now it doesn't count that way. But I could never be, especially because I dealt with the really little ones. And again, that makes a big difference when you're dealing with 5-year-olds. Yeah. You can't be a grouch.
No, you can't.
You've got to be their mommy while they're gone.
How did you change during the years you were teaching?
Got fatter. I always wondered. I felt like I was so active, and yet it didn't help my weight. How did I change? I don't know. I think I got more. I could be, again, I moved up to a grade level. I think I got so that I could be a little more strict and firm with the children. I did try to make a point. Again, that goes back to my feeling of making them like school. I could chew them out royally, but then I would try and make a point to say something positive afterwards, or put us in a situation where we could smile and laugh after something like that. I think that you need to create a balance. I have a very good friend who's a teacher, but she was always so, I always felt so strict and so cross with. And then again, you know, you get yourself to the point where you'd say something goofy, and then you'd lose the class and think, why did I do that? But then, you know what you have to learn to be when you are a teacher or in any job? you have to be yourself. Uh-huh. Because I remember my first years of teaching that I taught next to, in Iowa, where they had the three kindergartens, and I taught next to a little teeny sweet little lady, and she talked like this, and she would talk so softly that her children never made any noise, and she could leave the room, and
they wouldn't
make any noise. And in my class, it wasn't that way. And my first evaluation, my principal marked me down. He'd never even been in my room. Now, get this. He'd never even been in my room to sit and watch me teach. But he marked me down in my discipline. And so I went in and I said, what do I do? What do you suggest that I do? Well, really, he says, I know you can have discipline when you want it. Well, you know, what kind of an evaluation is that?
Yeah.
So I fretted and stewed about that a lot. And then I'd go in my room and I'd start out and I'd say, okay, now boys and girls, today I'm trying to be this nice, sweet lady. I couldn't maintain that. And it took me a year or two before I thought, I got to be myself.
Yeah.
I have to be me. I cannot be Mrs. Crosby next door because that is not my personality.
Yeah, true.
And so you have to be what your personality is, I think.
How did you prepare to become a teacher?
Well, I went to college. I lived in Ames, Iowa, which is where Iowa State University was, and I'd always thought I was going to go into child development because at that time they did not have an education program. Mm-hmm. I did not want to go to the teacher's college. I'd gone to teacher's college in Iowa at Girls State when I was a senior in high school, and I hated it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to teacher's college.
Uh-huh.
So I started at Iowa State in child development, but then I went 2 years, got married, had children, and went back 10, 11 years later. And by that time they had instituted their
teaching
program. So that's when I went into teaching. What was the question again?
How did you prepare?
Okay, so.
Went to college.
I basically, that's what I did, and my student teaching.
Did you always want to be a teacher?
Well, no, because my mother was a secretary, so when I was little, I always said I was going to
be a secretary.
And then when I got in ninth grade, I had a very nice ninth grade homeroom teacher, and she used to tell me all the time, you need to be a teacher, you need to go into teaching. I hate to admit it, but all my life, I just kind of fell into something, you know. Uh-huh. I all of a sudden, I'm going to college, and okay, I'll be in child development, because there's no teaching or whatever, and there wasn't anything else, and it just kind of things just fell in, and when it was all said and done, it fell in beautifully. But
that's good.
Some people have big goals, you know, and
yeah.
I hate to say that I really never did. I just kind of went along with my life, and just things just happened. And
that's good.
Worked all right for me.
Mm-hmm. What was required of you to keep your certification?
Well, let's see. I had to have a master's degree. So I guess that's what did it, because then I have a lifetime license.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to.
How many years do you have to get a master's degree in?
I don't know. When I moved here, I had to take so many hours of Indiana courses to get an Indiana license. So I took some master's courses and Indiana courses kind of at the same time. And that allowed me, I think I had 10 years or something after I moved here, get my master's degree. Mm-hmm. I don't know what. Of course, now masters aren't even required.
Mm-hmm.
I have a son who's you have to take so many classes, and even if you have a master's, you still have to renew your license every so many years by taking so many classes, is my understanding. I have a son who does not have a master's degree. He teaches up in Logansport. He doesn't want to get a master's degree in education. So he doesn't, but he is on the negotiating team, as he has negotiated in increased raises for these increased hours that you have to take to renew your license. So, whereas in some corporations, you know, the master's level, of course, that just raises you up quite a bit in your salary. So, you know, like in his case, he may have to eventually get a master's degree if he needs the money in his salary, which who wouldn't?
Probably would.
But, but I had a number of years to work on mine.
That's good. Did your educational philosophy change as you continued to teach?
Yeah, and it no
didn't change.
No, it's just always been the to instill a love of school and self confidence in the child. I think that's I just feel if they have both of those, they can accomplish anything. A lot. Yes.
How did you motivate students to read or write?
How did I motivate them to read? Well, I probably wasn't a great motivator.
Did you ever have students that didn't want to do anything?
Oh, yeah. What did I do? If you don't do your work, you don't go to recess.
That's one way.
That was probably, I don't know. I can't give you a very good answer on that one.
Okay. If you could do it all over again, would you still become a teacher?
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
Describe your most challenging student, and how did you deal with them?
That's really hard. The most challenging student over all the years. I suppose, and I'm not really thinking of one student or another, but I think your children who you feel are, and I do think they have a problem, like attention deficit or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you try different techniques to get them to pay attention and this kind of thing. I'm never one who tried to push a child into getting medicine. I've always felt that would be the last resort, but I have seen over the years children who could not do anything, could not sit still, could not complete a paper, that when they were put on a little bit of Ritalin or something like that, it was just, it entirely changed their persona so that they could at least concentrate and be successful in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that sounds like you know, a person who would always want to put somebody on medicine, and I don't feel that way at all. I've always just felt that, and like so many times a boy, if he's okay, he's a boy, you know, he's hyperactive, all the boys do that. I probably was more lenient as far as seeking to get a child put on medicine, but I have seen over the last few years the tremendous difference in the help that can be to a child. And you do hear a lot of criticism of, you know, all the teachers want to do is get them on, put on Ritalin, and that is not true at all. But there are some children that could benefit so much, and so many times a parent will resist that too.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, because, well, you know, you don't want your child medicated from time he's a little bitty.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, now you can see that, but I see how it really makes a difference in what they can do in their success.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not successful, you're not happy.
Yeah, true. Did you deal with any violent students or acts of violence when you were teaching? You said the one boy with the file.
Yeah, I have a couple of kids who, but mainly what they would do, and that's only been one or two, you know, one of them shouted at me once. I sent him to the principal. That was one. I didn't send very many kids to the principal. That was one time, because I just thought that is not necessary. You do not yell at the teacher.
Yeah.
Carol, we had one little boy once years and years and years ago. In fact, he's in a hospital somewhere in Wisconsin. Even today, they could not deal with him in the city here, so they put him in some kind of a hospital. But he got eventually so that he would bark like a dog. I mean, he had, I don't know whether he had Tourette syndrome or what he had, but he came to us. He'd been expelled from kindergarten in Virginia or somewhere else, and he came to us, and we tried things like toilet paper seat belts to keep him in his seat, and you just tried all kinds of things to motivate him. And, of course, he'd rip it apart.
Uh-huh.
But when I think back at him, Elias was his name. And I guess he just got worse and worse and worse. And every day he'd leave and he'd say, "Teacher, I'm going to try to be good tomorrow."
Uh-oh.
And, you know, poor little kid could not help himself.
Yeah.
Could not help himself.
Mm-hmm.
But those were... You know, there have been kids like that you almost forget about them, and they have a hard life for themselves,
yeah.
That's for sure.
What did your students do for you?
Made me happy.
Did you have summer vacations, and how did you spend them?
Oh, yeah. Always had summer vacation. A lot of times I taught summer school.
Did you?
We'd at least go for a 10, 14-day trip, family. One would relax.
Yeah. Did you consider your teaching stressful? And what did you do to relieve stress or to vary your activities?
Well, I never really considered it really stressful. It didn't, stress me out. You're busy all the time. Busy, busy, busy. In the classroom, it's just, it's constant. You know, if someone thinks a teacher sits at her desk all day and that's it, no. you know that's not true. It's constant moving from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next.
Yeah.
And so, in that respect, you might say it's stressful.
But it didn't ever stress you out.
But I'd never really basically felt stressed out. Sometimes if we were working on a program or something, extra things like that, you know, then you would feel maybe stressed out. I guess I'm not a person that gets stressed out in that. What I think of when someone says they're stressed out, I don't get that way.
If someone didn't like their job, they would say they were getting stressed.
Yeah. They're like burned out. I don't quite understand that term, burned out, but I'm sure that if you were stressed all day, you'd get burned out.
Yeah. I think that's all of them.